Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning, talking some college football. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Chris Vanini from The Athletic. Chris, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking time to be with us. We really appreciate it. So, Chris, a game of heavy local interest around here coming up on Saturday between Tennessee and Georgia. I want to start on the Georgia perspective. They lose to Ole Miss this past weekend. They've got two losses. They've played a heck of a schedule so far. So what do you make of this game in particular for Georgia? Is this an elimination game for the Bulldogs? How do you view what's now in front of Georgia after their second loss?
Yeah, I think it is an elimination game for Georgia. It's hard to see a three-loss SEC team getting in at this point in the season, just kind of based on what we've seen everywhere else. It's likely Indiana will only be a one-loss team. Ole Miss is probably, you know, winning out. Auburn, Alabama probably too. So, yeah, I think it is. And, you know, Georgia's it's just not at the level it has been for the last several years. I do think part of that is the schedule. The schedule is a lot tougher this year than it has been for the last couple of years. But also, you know, the offensive line is banged up. It's a lot more leaky than it used to. They're not running the ball as well as a result. Carson Beck is under a lot more pressure as a result. And I think that's what's leading to so many turnovers, is he's kind of rushing things. And they don't have the same weapons on the outside. When you lose a Ladd McConkey, you lose a Brock Bowers, that's tough. And watching Ole Miss kind of push them around in the trenches was new. It was a different scene. And so it'll be interesting kind of moving forward how Georgia is able to handle this without that massive talent advantage that they've had for so long. And for Tennessee, obviously, you know, it starts with making sure Nico is healthy and Dylan Sampson as well.
So, Chris, and you wrote about this in your, you know, you rank every week the top 134. I mean, the Big 12, the ACC, obviously, I mean, they have really hurt themselves, you know, in both leagues, to the point where it looks like you're talking auto bids with them. Then you got a group of five. I mean, Notre Dame right now looks good. Notre Dame Army is of high interest in a couple weeks. But it looks like four Big Ten, four SEC. I do wonder, and look, I mean, I wrote Saturday, like, Indiana's basically a lock. I do wonder if Indiana gets just humiliated at Ohio State, which I don't expect to happen, but if it does happen, and Indiana's sitting there at 11-1, and the one-ranked team beat them badly, and they, you know, obviously didn't have a great second half against Michigan. Do you think it's possible a fifth SEC, a two-loss fifth SEC team could edge them out in the end?
Yeah, I don't think Indiana's a lock if they get blown out. If you play at a competitive game, I think you're okay. But it is going to create that problem if you don't have a real marquee win, and they don't. And they haven't beat anybody who's in the top 25, and they don't play them except for Ohio State. That's where, you know, if you're not in the SEC, you really would have liked Georgia to beat Ole Miss last week, give Ole Miss a third loss. And this week, you'd really like Tennessee to beat Georgia, give Georgia a third loss. You want these SEC teams with two losses to get to three. You're going to want Texas to beat Texas A&M in a few weeks, if Texas A&M still has two losses. Like, that's what a lot of it comes down to. You're going to need to hope the SEC starts kind of knocking itself out. While the SEC is not as maybe strong at the very top and doesn't have one or two elite teams like it used to, the result is you have a bunch of really good teams all around that you know, that 7 to 13 type of spot. So, yeah, Indiana, not a lock. But the SEC positioning itself well because it's not eliminating itself, which is what everybody else needs.
So, Chris, Diego Pavia suing the NCAA, we found this out on Friday, and basically looking for two more seasons of eligibility after being in junior college. What do you make of that decision by him? Where do you think this could lead? And if this is successful, how do you think that changes college football moving forward?
It's It's real interesting because it leans on a lot of the same arguments that were made that led to the transfer rule change, which is these NCAA rules, the concept being the NCAA rules are restricting NIL earning potential, so it's an antitrust violation. That they got a temporary injunction on the transfer once the transfer rule changed. This one is specific to the junior college rules, saying, hey, somebody can go play pro in another sport and they don't use years of eligibility. Why can't I play football at the school that is not governed by the NCAA and the NCAA can still set those rules? Don't really know where it's going to go, but the NCAA has been losing these cases in court for a bit now. A lot of people have wondered, you know, when will somebody challenge the essentially 4-year clock of college football? Why should they only be limited to 4 years of playing or 5 with a redshirt rule? Like, you can go to college for 8 years. Like, a normal person can do that. There's not a limit on how many years you go to college. So therefore, if you're a student, why should there be a limit on how long you can play football? That would be the thing that kind of breaks everything open and changes everything we think about eligibility. That hasn't happened yet. That's not what this specific one is about. I don't really know which way it's going to go, but it is an interesting case that, hey, junior colleges are not part of the NCAA. Should the NCAA be able to set limits on that? I don't know, but I know Vanderbilt is hoping for a quick resolution, or at least a quick first ruling, because the portal's opening. And Pavia made the point like, hey, the portal's opening. I need to know soon because it impacts my ability to negotiate with Vanderbilt or negotiate with other schools if I go in the portal. So we'll see if we get a ruling here in the next couple of weeks.
Thank you for mentioning that people can go to college for 8 years. I feel seen, Chris. I very, very much appreciate that. No, it really is interesting. I mean, that one is wild. The idea of just, you know, hey, why can't I be like a lifetime education, you know, and just my career will be like, I'll be Tennessee's quarterback for a decade, which, I mean, that's to me a bridge too far. But this one is really interesting. While we're on this whole topic with the NCAA, Chris, Where do you think now? Obviously, you know, there is a difference in Democratic and Republican control when it comes to this entire question of labor as well. How do you view that moving forward at this point, and where we're headed with that as we head into this next fall when, you know, the revenue sharing begins?
Yeah, I'd expect a lot of the labor organizing stuff to take a step back. You know, because Trump's likely going to not only replace the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board General Counsel, but potentially some members on that. So a lot of those cases that are going to the NLRB may now kind of be viewed differently. Republicans, if they control all three both branches of Congress and the presidency, it's going to be a lot less likely to get through a bill with major athlete protections. Ted Cruz is probably going to be someone leading a lot of this stuff. It's still going to need to be a bipartisan bill, most likely, but there'll probably be less athletes' rights stuff involved in that, just because Republicans have typically wanted a more general, smaller, vaguer type of agreement, whether that means they're not employees. I think it's more likely now that Congress would pass something that they're not employees. I think ultimately this helps the NCAA get to something. I don't know what that thing is, but it's more likely something gets done and something that's a bit more NCAA friendly on that front. There's other wide ranging things that could impact schools, like whatever happens to the Department of Education and various things. But as it relates to the NCAA, will probably make things a little bit easier for the NCAA to get something out of Congress.
So, Chris, are we going to see Deion Sanders in Colorado in the college football playoff? What do we think?
I mean, they control their path there now. If they win the rest of their games, they're in. And this team has just gotten so much better as the year has gone on. And, you know, they finished the regular season with Utah, Kansas, Oklahoma State. Don't think any of those are for sure wins, but they can certainly win all of those. And ultimately, as you look at Colorado down the stretch, and if Colorado plays BYU and you compare them, like, Colorado's got the two best players on the field. You know, most times it steps on the field with Shedeur Sanders, with Travis Hunter. And sometimes that's enough to win. So, like, yeah, they're what, 7-2 now? And, yeah, they're in a position now to potentially make the playoffs in his second year, which would be wild. And even if they don't, like, they're clearly so much more improved here, and he really deserves a lot of credit for bringing in a good transfer class, for getting them better in the trenches. Coaches are doing a good job, the new coaches he hired, and this is what you wanted when you hired him.
Yeah, no question. It's I did not see this coming. So, Chris, you have Oregon number one in your rankings, as you know they should be, but do you believe – Who right now do you think is going to win it? Who do you think is the best team, or the team with the highest ceiling here as we move into the next month?
I think it's Oregon, but I don't feel like amazing about it. That's what's interesting, is that there's really no team, you know, like we've had for the past decade, whether it was an Alabama or a Georgia, and you're just like, yeah, this team is clearly so much better than everybody. Yeah, maybe they lost a game, but ultimately – these are the one, two, or three teams I think that have a chance to win the championship. I think it's a pretty big group this year. Like, Texas is good, but not amazing, I don't think. Georgia's not as good as it was. Alabama's flawed. Ohio State is flawed. Oregon is number one and undefeated, but they were one play away from losing to Ohio State. Penn State is solid, even if they can never win the big one. Like, there's a real big group of teams here, right? And I think that's going to make the playoff a lot of fun. If I had to pick somebody today, I would pick Oregon, but I wouldn't feel like amazing about that. And it feels like it's the most wide open the top of the sport has been in a very long time.
No doubt about it. Well, Chris, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and enjoy the rest of the season. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Chris Vanini from The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rextra. We'll take your reaction to what Chris had to say. We have our own college football playoff rankings in advance of the rankings tonight. And Joe, as we know, our rankings are better anyway. So we'll have that coming up next here on the program. We will get back into the Titans and the front office discussion later in the program as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rextra, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.